The Barrymore Theater presents Dan Savage's Hump Film Fest, 20 years and going hard, Saturday, April 19th at 7:30 p.m. Hump has been serving up hot, heavy, and hilarious dirty film shorts to the masses for two whole decades, and we're kicking off this milestone year with the first of two all-new lineups for 2025. The mission of Hump is to create a public space for sex positivity, representation, and inclusivity, which, given our modern circumstances, is more important than ever. These are films made by real people for real people. More information at BarrymoreLive.com. The Barrymore Theater presents Dan Savage's Hump Film Fest, 20 years and going hard, Saturday, April 19th at 7:30 p.m. You're listening to WORT Madison.
Hello, everyone. It's me, Bad Sister Heidi, here on Psychoacoustics. Broadcasting from WORT 89.9 FM, Madison. That's the Madison in Wisconsin. What you heard in that last set, we start off with La Femme from their most recent album, Rock Machine. You heard Ya Baby. After that, King Stingray from Down Under. Their newest album is called For the Dreams, and you heard Best Bits. Let's share the best bits with your friends. After that, we heard CRX, Walk With Me, from their EP Interiors. And Laura Lee and the Jets, Unsolicited Advice, from their EP of the same album. Then you heard Are We Falling in Love or Am I Just Losing My Mind, from the experiment by Replaced by Robots, something brand new. And one last brand new thing we heard was Wet Leg, Catch These Fists. Their new album, Moisturizer, is coming out in May, if I remember correctly. So there's that. Coming up next, we're going to hear some, at least several tracks from Beatrice Kay, who was American. She was a singer, vaudevillian, music hall performer, and stage and film actress, born Honey Cooper and Honey Beatrice Cooper. She was born in New York City in 1907, died in 1986. I didn't even know who she was in 1986. Her career spanned vaudeville, radio, motion pictures, nightclubs, television, records. She began her career at the age of six as Little Lord Fauntleroy in a stock theater in Louisville, Kentucky, and she went on to become a headliner at Billy Rose's Diamond Horseshoe nightclub in New York. She was on the Mercury Theater with Orson Welles and eventually hosted her own radio show, The Beatrice Kay Show. She sang regularly on Gaslight Gaieties and the Gay 90s Review, as well as performing in several Broadway musicals. That's the word I'm looking for. So yeah, we're going to hear a little bit of Beatrice Kay coming up, including her song Mention My Name in Sheboygan. Of course, I have to play that. But first, let's listen to a couple of tracks from her album on Laugh Records. having a party. Choice gems of bold wit and sexopathic humor. Of course, for adults only. And that's why we are playing it during our Slack Harbor after 10 p.m. So keep in mind, these recordings from the 1900s may include words, concepts, and ideas that don't necessarily align 100% with today's language and how we use it, but I hope you don't let the humor get lost in that. And Beatrice, she does a pretty good job, I think. I love this recording, actually, because there are women in the audience yelling out suggestions. I'll try to find that track. But yeah, it's let's have a party with Beatrice K here on Psycho Acoustics.
Dublin's fair city, the girls are so pretty. 'Twas there that I first met sweet Molly Malone. She was a fishmonger, and faith, 'tis no wonder, her mother and father were fishmongers too. They drove their wheelbarrow through streets wide and narrow, crying, cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh. She died of a fever, and no one could save her. And that's all I know of sweet Molly Malone. Now her ghost drives a barrow through streets wide and narrow, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh, alive, alive, oh, alive, alive, oh, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive.
Hey kids, this is Beatrice Kay. Beatrice.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
This is Rusty.
Hey, wait a minute. I'll get to know everybody, and I don't want you to have to go through this whole big rigmarole. Let's all have a drink, and I need a cigarette. I'm pooped.
Look,
I've been packing all night, getting my tickets for going back to Hollywood.
I'm so glad you came out. We have been going through all kinds of routines and questions about you.
Oh, well, you don't have to tell me the bit. How old is she?
Yeah. How old is she?
I know.
She's 65. She's got to be 80. She's
been saying how well preserved.
You know what? Tell them the Billy Rose story. The gay 90s Billy Rose story, so that they'll understand.
Oh, this is how you want to find out how old I am.
That's right.
Well, it was very simple. I was broke and I needed a job. In fact, I was so broke because my husband was in alimony jail. Let's see, which husband was that? Oh, that was his second husband. I didn't put him in alimony jail. His ex-wife put him in alimony jail. And so I had to go around and give auditions by myself. And of course, he had always played piano for me. And here he was up in alimony jail, writing music orchestrations without benefit of piano or oboe. And so I had an extra buck, and so I took the buck and gave it to some piano player and gave my audition for Billy Rose. He was very sweet to me, and of course I had very sophisticated material that I was doing in clubs at that time. And he hired me for what I thought was the Casa Mañana, but it turned out to be Billy Rose's Diamond Horseshoe. Well, then he said to me, now this is a gay 90 review and you have to sing gay 90 songs. And I said, that's all. I don't know any gay 90 songs. I don't know how to do them. He said, but you're a great comic and you can do anything. Well, now you aren't going to fight with that, are you? You know, when a man says nice things to you. So he said, go out and get some Gay 90s songs. Well, I knew all the publishers. So I went out and I asked the publishers for some of their old tunes, and I got 20-year-old songs. I thought they were terribly old. And I went to all kinds of publishers, and they gave me things like You Gotta See Your Mama Every Night or You Can't See Mama at All, which I thought was pretty old. And they asked if I wanted Tear Jerkers, and I said, heck no, I'm a comic. I didn't know how funny the Tear Jerkers were. So I took about 12 songs back to Billy Rose, and he looked at them and he said, well, that's not Gay 90s, this isn't Gay 90s, and this isn't, I wrote it. And it was, You Gotta See Your Mama Every Night or You Can't See Mama at All. Of course, my face was a little red. But among them all was a song called Tarara Bumdie. He said, nah, now this is Gay 90s. In fact, it's older than Gay 90s. It's a great song. Sing it for me. And I said, well, I beg your pardon, but I've never seen the song. I don't know. And he said, well, you've got to sing it for me. And so I went up to the piano and I sang, you know, Tarara Bumdie, Tarara Bumdie. And he sat with a deadpan and said, is that the way you're going to sing it in the show? By this time, my chin is out, and I said, no, that is not the way I'm going to sing it in the show. He said, well, how are you going to sing it in the show? And I went, Tarara Bumtie. He said, that's it. Well, I sang that 7 nights a week, twice a night, for 17 months, so don't anybody ever ask me to sing it. I learned a great lesson in logic many years ago from a little Italian iceman that I had when I lived in Greenwich Village. I was going to rehearsal one morning, and I got the paper, and on the subway I read that there'd been a murder across the street. Some man had been garrotted with a rope and tied in a knot that looked like some man from the rodeo had tied it, and the rodeo was in town, and he was known to give some pretty wild parties. And then it went on to say that our little iceman, whom we also got red wine from, and the wood for our fireplace. You remember him, don't you, Dom? And, well, he was walking along the street, and he was questioned by the police. So when I came home, I found him along the street, and I said to him, hey, Joe, I see that you got in trouble with the police. He says, I'm going to get in trouble. Stupid police. And I said, why, what happened? He says, they asking me questions. That's all. They asking me, do you know the man he's a bit out? And I said, how I know the man he's a bit dead? I leave it the key under the mat. I take it the key, I open the door, I leave it a 15 cents ice. He's asleep in the bed. Every time I do this twice a week, I leave it the key under the mat, I go away. At the end of the week, he pay me. How I know the man he's a bit dead? Well, you must know the man who was dead. And they question him, and he's complaining to me about how many times they asked him. He said, how I know the man he's a bit dead? He's in the bed, he's asleep. But you must know the man, he was dead. No. If I know the man, he's a bit dead, I don't leave it the ice. I lose a 15 cent. I think that's a great story. So that's why I went to Billy Rose. And while I was in it, of course, we started making, I did club dates to add a little more. I made $75 in that, you know. And that was a lot of money because finally the creases got out of the belly and we started paying some of the debts. And then I started getting interested in radio and doing club dates between shows. And finally I was offered a Gay 90s program that the president of, Mr. Paley wanted, president of Columbia Broadcasting. And we started a little program and it growed like Topsy, and all of a sudden they stuck me with a bustle. And I've been stuck with it ever since. And besides that, I started to make records, and that's how the whole thing started. And I'll tell you one little secret. I was still in my 20s when I sang my first Gay 90s song, so figure it out. While we were living at the Belvedere Hotel, a couple of years before that, I'd been working in the Jewish Alps. The first and only time I ever worked there. I worked at the same place that Danny Kaye worked, and, well, we won't go into that. But while we were living at the Belvedere Hotel, two of the waitresses who had been working up at this place came to visit us. We didn't have any money to take them out to the theater or, you know, a big dinner or something like that. But we did have a little car. We had a little Ford Roadster with a rumble seat. And this particular week, it wasn't in hock. So we decided to take a ride, and it was very late in the fall. It was early winter, not quite winter. And how we ever got up to Lakewood, New Jersey, I'll never know. But this is the Alps, you know, the winter resort of God's chosen people. And it was very early in the season and nothing was open. And suddenly we got very cold sitting in the car and we looked in the back and saw these two girls frozen solid. So we decided we had to have something warm. And we looked around, nothing was open. But in the distance we saw some smoke coming out of the chimney of a little log cabin. And it said, a little tiny sign said, Tea and Fortunes. So we drove the car up and pried the girls out of the rumble seat and walked into this lovely little log cabin with pine boughs and a great big roaring fireplace, and it smelled of food. And this very darling woman walked up and said, oh, how do you do? Is there something I can do for you? And I said, oh, you're French. And she said, oui, how did you know? I said, well, I'm psychic. Yeah. And I said, well, we're very cold. May we use your fireplace? And do you have hot tea or hot coffee and perhaps maybe a piece of bread and butter? And she said, oh, but of course. I have coffee, tea, cake, and the fireplace. Oh, and if you are hungry, I have on the fire some pot au feu. And of course, this is one of my dreams. I adore pot au feu. And she said that we were all welcome to it. And of course, pretty soon, the coats are off, we're warming ourselves by the fire, and suddenly we have these great big luscious bowls of pot au feu and great big pieces of soup meat and bread and butter and coffee and cake. Now we feel no pain. And suddenly the two little waitresses said, Beatrice, tell some of those Jewish stories you used to tell when we were up in the mountains. And so I told one or two, and one of their favorite ones was this little cloak and suit manufacturer who came to his friend and said, Sam, got an idea for our new line. Got such an idea, we'll revolutionize the entire industry. Revolutionize. So Sam said, so make it. He says, make it. With what? I haven't got the money. So borrow the money. Go to your friends. Go out to everybody. Borrow the money. You like the idea? You think it's a successful idea? Borrow the money. So that's a good idea. So he goes to his friends, his poor little friends who have maybe $3,000, $1,200, whatever it may be, and he browbeats them into lending him the money. Well, he makes the line. P.S. They can't sell one dress. It's a complete failure. Now he goes to Sam. He says, Sam, got to kill myself. Got to kill myself. The line, a failure. Wouldn't sell a dress. Got to kill myself. My creditors are driving me out of my mind. I can't pay the money. Got very little money. His friend says, how much money you got left? He says, maybe $200, $300. He says, you don't have to kill yourself. Got a much better idea. Much better. He says, we'll make believe you're dead. We'll put you in a coffin. We'll have already a burial with the funeral parlor. And then, instead of putting you in the ground, we'll take you out of the coffin. We'll change your name. You'll take a couple hundred dollars. You'll go in a different city. You'll live already. So he says, you know, that's not a bad idea. So they go through it. Now he's lying in state in the coffin, not daring to breathe. And all of his family and friends and creditors come. And they pass by. And, of course, every one of them say that rather than see him dead, they would rather he still owed everybody. Now his creditors, one by one come up. And one of them, the first one says, low life. Once you were my friend, you took from me $800 out from my wife's mouth, her teeth. Now she ain't got no teeth. I ain't got no home. I got nothing. But rather than see you dead laying here, I wish you were still alive. Owed me the money. And the second creditor comes along and says, you're a dirty dog. Mine son's education, now he's got to live to be a dope. With that money you took away, I got nothing left. My wife's not talking to me. My mother-in-law's not talking to me. My father-in-law's killing me. But rather than see you would commit suicide and die, I would rather you'd be alive, owe me the money. Now more friends go by. Finally, the third creditor comes and says, your dog, you dirty lowlife, you gunner, you thief, you rat. Out from me you took the heart. I got no home. I got no wife. I got no children. I got nothing, not even a business. $4,000 I gave to you, every cent that I have in the world. I'm glad you're dead. I'll kill you again. You see this knife? With this knife, I'm plunging into your heart till you're dead, dead, dead all over again. The little Jew in the coffin sits up and says, you all pay.
Give me a ticket to Sheboygan.
Now, pardon me there, stranger, but my name is Kay.
Oh, yeah?
I overheard you say that you were gone away.
So what?
Now, I've done lots of traveling, and if I may boast, everybody's heard of me from coast to coast.
Nuts!
Mention my name in Sheboygan. It's the greatest little town in the world. Just tell them all you're an old friend of mine, and every door in town will have a big welcome sign. So mention my name in Sheboygan. And if you ever get in a jam, just mention my name. I said mention my name, but please don't tell them where I am. While the teletypes are talking and the sirens roar, I'll be hopping on a freighter for a foreign shore.
They love you in Sheboygan?
Love me in Sheboygan.
I'll take a ticket to Paducah.
Paducah? Well, just mention my name in Paducah. It's the greatest little town in the world. I know a gal there you'll simply adore. She was Miss Paducah back in 1904. So mention my name in Paducah. And if you ever get in a mess, just mention my name. I said mention my name, but please don't give her my address. While the teletypes are talking and the sirens roar, I'll be hopping on a freighter for a foreign shore.
They're crazy about you in Paducah?
Crazy about me in Paducah.
I'll take a ticket to Elmira.
Elmira? Well, just mention my name in Elmira. It's the greatest little town in the world. I told the mayor that he would go far. I even gave the sheriff an exploding cigar. Mention my name in Elmira. And if they try to put you in jail, just mention my name, I said mention my name, but please don't write to me for bail. While the teletypes are talking and the sirens roar, I'll be hopping on a freighter for a foreign shore.
They love you in Sheboygan?
Love me in Sheboygan.
Crazy about you in Paducah?
Crazy about me in Paducah.
Mad about you in Elmira?
You better take a ticket to Tacoma.
Take a ticket to Tacoma?
Take a ticket to Tacoma. And just mention my name in Tacoma. It's the greatest little town in the world. I know the big shots in their city hall. They've even got my picture on the post office wall. So mention my name in Tacoma. And if you ever get in a spat, just mention my name. I said mention my name, but please don't tell them where I'm at. I wanna go there. Please don't tell them where. So please don't tell them where I am.
A girl I know has a new boyfriend who lives across the way. He took her to a show last night, and both were feeling gay. When they got home, 'twas kind of late. Her dad began to roar. He yelled, "Come on upstairs, Nancy. It's nearly 4:30. So she kissed him in the hallway, and he shot across the street. She surely loved his kissing. It was so soft and sweet. When her dad picked up his shotgun, her friend took to his feet. Then she kissed him in the hallway, and he shot across the street. The next night she sneaked out, and they took in another show. They stopped to have a drink or two. Their love was all aglow. When they got home, 'twas kind of late. Her dad yelled out once more, "Come on upstairs, Nancy. It's nearly 4:30." So she kissed him in the hallway, and he shot across the street. She surely loved his kissing. It was so nice and sweet. When her dad picked up his shotgun, her friend took to his feet. Then she kissed him in the hallway, and he shot across the street.
Yes, you can. Tell a bride.
The two little ladies of the evening have a date to meet at home to get dressed to go out, and one of them is very late. This I heard when I was about 9 years old. It was my first Cockney story, the first one I ever told. So the second one comes in terribly late, and her hair is disheveled, her hat is lost, her clothes are torn, and she said, "God, Marzi, I'm terribly late and I'm terribly sorry. But I got an awful crush down on Piccadilly, and they nearly pulled me drawers off." And the other one said, "Drawers on a bank holiday?" Swank. Now, these two young ladies of the evening, who are used to walking Piccadilly, most likely, and a bit of Soho, decide they've been making quite a good deal of money the last month or two, and they have some extra dough. So they decide to take a night off. Now, because they're not out for trade, they're quietly dressed, not so heavily made up. The feathers are missing. The little tippet, the fur tippet is gone, and the jewelry. And they're dressed very nicely. And they decide to have a great evening. They're going to have some cocktails, they'll probably go see a show, and then have to go to some little club and enjoy themselves. As they're walking down Piccadilly, the first one said, "Eh, Mazzy, pipe the guy." And she says, "Oh, he's nice, isn't he?" She says, "He is that. Why don't you take him?" She says, "Why do I want to? It's me night off." She says, "Well, why don't you try? We could make a few extra bob and have a few more beers." "So, well, if you don't mind, I don't mind." So she walks up to this man who is dressed in the derby hat and the four-button suit and the briefcase, and he's hurrying by. He's rather attractive, looks rather posh. And she says, "Hello." And he said, "How do you do?" And she said, "Are you an Addy?" He says, "Rather." She says, "Too much of Addy?" He said, "For what?" She says, "Oh, you know." He said, "I think I do. I really don't have time to take you to my diggings, and I haven't time to go to yours." She says, "Oh, that's not necessary. I know a very nice, convenient place right round the corner." He said, "Oh, you do? May I ask where?" She said, "Oh, you're such a gentleman, I don't know if you'd like it." He said, "Well, I've tried many things. Now, what's in your mind?" She said, "I know a very nice, convenient alley." He said, "A what?" She said, "A very nice, convenient alley." He said, "Well, I've tried everything but an alley." And he looks her over once again, and she's rather cute. He said, "Okay." So they go up this alley, and the second young lady keeps a watch to see that they're not disturbed. Presently, the gentleman adjusts himself, thanks the young lady very much, and hands her some money and walks down the alley with his briefcase, and the second young lady stands there and holds out her hand, palm up, and says, "Something for the bridesmaid, sir."
Oh,
Now, I'm sure you all know what a repertory company is. If you're in a show for one night, you play a different matinee and a different night show, two different shows. If you're in for 3 days, you play three different shows in the matinee and three different night shows. You have a tremendous repertory of plays. Occasionally, they'd play a week in a town, and then, of course, they'd have a lot of shows that they did. And if they got to a big town, they'd do better shows because they could augment the small company with semi-professionals from the little theater groups and from elocution schools and things like that. Well, in the company was a woman who played second leads and character woman. She was young enough to play second leads and old enough to put the makeup on and play character women. And unbeknownst to the company, she tippled a little bit. And she got away with it for some time until she got to a town where she had friends and they went out to dinner and they had the whole thing, the bird and the bottle, and forgot the bird and had the bottle. And she arrived at the theater quite woofed. And they were doing a play about Indian territory and the fort and the soldiers and the whole Hazarai. So she had to play this young Indian maid, and the leading lady played the white girl who was really the sweetheart of the captain. But when the play opens, the young captain suddenly appears on the scene and sees this little Indian maid weaving a blanket. And he stops and makes that old stand, you know, ta-da, and says, "Ah, little Indian maid, what is your name?" And she shyly looks up and says, "My name is Singing Swallow." And they fall in love, just like that. But later on, the commandant of the fort comes with his daughter, and of course the Indian maid finds out that this is the sweetheart, the real sweetheart of the captain, and that she's just been toyed with, and her heart is broken. And very shortly after that, the fort is ambushed by thousands of Indians. And of course they are yes, from the elocution schools. And of course there are many wounded and many dead, and they're besieged and they can't get out, and the water supply is cut off, and the Indian maid is inside the fort, of course, not out with her own people. And her heart is so broken, she realizes she's been used, that she doesn't care if she lives or dies. So she grabs a canteen and says, "I will get the water," and runs out. Well, several other things happen. There's a great deal of time element before she comes back with an arrow in her back and the canteen and says, "Here is the water," and dies. And of course, you know, that's practically the end of the show. Well, this night, as I say, she was woofed. So they managed to sit her up against a tree trunk to weave her blanket. And she is weaving, and I want to tell you, both ways she is weaving. And the young captain comes and says, "Ah, little Indian maid, what is your name?" And she doesn't even hear him. Finally he goes again, "Ah, little Indian maid, what is your name?" And she looks up at him, scratches her head, and says, "Let me see." And finally he goes like this, you know, to show that she's supposed to be the swallow, and she says, "Oh yes, flying eagle." Well, the same thing happened several weeks later. She was playing the old southern mother of a young man who went to war in the Great Civil War. And he's supposedly killed. God bless you. And but she never believes that he's dead. So for years she sits on her front porch knitting him all kinds of little goodies and rocking in her rocking chair and knowing that someday she'll see him. The day comes when this poor bedraggled, torn, hurt, and unhappy character arrives at the gate and says, "Mother." And she stops her knitting, and for an old lady, rushes down the steps to the gate and grabs him and says, "My son." It's very touching. This night she'd been out again. So now they managed to get her in this rocking chair, and she's rocking back and forth like that. And you can tell that what that knitting is. She never hits the right needle or the right stitch, and is dropping stitches, and the ball of yarn rolls away, and the glasses are way down on the end of her nose, and her wig is all crooked. And that's all she's doing throughout the play, because they try not to read any lines with her. Finally, she sits there, and comes time for this poor bedraggled son to say, "Mother." Well, she doesn't hear him again. She's still rocking, and she's humming, and she's knitting. And finally he goes, "Mother!" So she goes, "Huh?" Now she lays down the knitting, and she straightens the wig and puts the glasses on, and she very delicately tries to get herself out of this rocking chair. Now she looks at these stairs she has to go down, three big steps. And she looks at him, and she looks at the big pillar. So she gets out of the chair and hangs herself around this pillar, looks down at the stairs again, and looks at her son and says, "Come here." Now, there's one more story that Mrs. Tedan used to tell us, I think is my favorite. They got to Atlanta, Georgia, which was a big city. Now they could put on some of their big plays with a lot of people in it, because they could get extras there and small talking part, bit part players. So, they were going to put on a play about Russia. And all through this play, they talk about this Tartar, who had been a beloved servant. The children had grown up with him. The parents adored him, and it was some royalty, of course, whom he had worked for. But he had felt the call to go back home, and he hadn't been with them for several years. So you hear about him all during the play. And suddenly at the end of the play, the Tartars attack the castle. And they start, they pillage, and they rob, and they burn, and they attempt rape. And they tied up the father, and they are trying to beat out of him where the money is. And suddenly in the midst of this, dashes in this fantastic character, their old servant, the Tartar, and he says he's not going to stand by and see his master murdered. And so he saves them, and the women are not raped, and they're not robbed, and the father is not beaten, and he leaves once more saying he still loves them, and that's the end of the show. Well, now, the cast would never rehearse with these bit players. The stage manager took them through it because they didn't have time. They did a different matinee show and did a different show at night. Well, that night they come to the theater and they're going to do this great Russian play, and they see this fabulous-looking man, 6'6". He really fits the costume of the Tartar. He's got the big astrakhan hat on and a big black beard, and he fits this outfit. He is powerful. And he's walking up and down, and he's reading this part quietly to himself and going through the motions. And they're so thrilled about the whole thing. So the play goes on. Now the Tartars come, and they start their vile acts, and their pandemonium breaks loose. And suddenly into the center comes this 6'6", gigantic man. And he says, "Stop! I can't stand by and see my master murdered." Lots of funny things happened to me with fans. Like, for instance, I was in San Francisco playing in a club, and I came out after the show, and I was tired, and I was wearing slacks, and this woman rushed over to me and said, "Oh, my dear," she said, "you don't know what a fan of yours I am. I have every record you ever made." And she named almost all of them, and there were many, believe me. And she told me she had seen me in this theater and that nightclub, and how one time she had run away from her husband to come to New York to see me at the Paramount. And she was such a divine fan that I was terribly touched. And she said, "Oh, I must have my husband meet you. Will you please come in and meet him?" And I said, "I don't want to go in slacks. I'm ready to go home. Why don't you bring him out here, and I'll be happy to say hello." And so she did. She said, "Darling, this is the woman I ran away from you to go to New York and see her. And this is the woman I adore. Now you're a fan of hers, and I want you to meet her. This is Miss Beatrice Lilly."
Just tell the Jewish man with the coffin.
I was
going to
say some more Jewish.
Please. The Jewish man with the coffin, please.
Well. There's an old man who decides he has no family, no relatives, nobody. He's got loads of money. And he knows he's not going to live much longer, so he decides, who's going to worry about how I'm buried? So he decides to go out and shop for a coffin. He goes into the first casket maker and he says, I'm an old man. I'm 96 years old. Haven't got much longer to live. Got plenty of money, plenty of money. I want to be buried in the latest fashion. What do you got here? The clerk says, brother, you have come to the right place. Says, take a look. Over here, solid mahogany. Sterling silver handles for the pallbearers. Fits like a glove. Lined with plush velvet. So the old man says, that's our idea, a magnificent thing. How much does it cost? He says, $2,600. The old man says, oi, $2,600. So, well, I'll tell you, I'll take a look around. I'll shop a little bit. This is my favorite line. I'll shop a little bit for the casket. If I don't find what I want, I'll come back. So he goes across the street to another casket maker, pulls the same line. He's an old man. He hasn't got much longer to live, got a lot of money. What have you got? I want to be buried in the latest fashion. And the clerk says, brother, you have come to the right place. Taking a look over here, solid mahogany. Sterling silver handles for the pallbearers. Fits like a glove. The old man says, how much does it cost? He says, $1,200. He says, this I'll take. This I'll take. Now, when I'm dead, my lawyers will tell you, you'll send the coffin. This is what I want to be buried. This is exactly. Now he pays the check, gives him the address of his lawyers, goes outside, and he takes a look at that first place, and he thinks, they're bums. Those thieves. I got to taking advantage of this, that's all. This is my opportunity. He goes in and takes the clerk and he says, you dirty lowlife. You dirty bum, because I'm an old man. Got plenty of money. You're taking advantage of me. For the same thing you're asking, $2,600 across the street, I got for a lot less. A lot less. The same identical thing. And the clerk says, in two words, impossible. He says, now on top of this, you're insulting me, calling me a liar. He said, couldn't be. Solid mahogany? The old man says, solid mahogany. Sterling silver handles for the pallbearers. Sterling silver handles for the pallbearers. Fits like a glove, like a kid glove. Lined with plush velvet? He says, no. Taffeta. The clerk says, taffeta? In 2 weeks, your backside will be out.
He uses powder, lipstick, and paint. If you sneak behind him, he's liable to faint. A real live He-Man is what he ain't. He's the queen of Fire Island. He walks along, hands on his hips. He likes to hang around those battleships. But when he sees a sailor, he twitches his lips. He's the queen of Fire Island. He's got dreamy eyes, curly hair. He just dyed it yellow. Doesn't smoke and doesn't swear. He's just a very nice fellow. He plays piano, kinda cute. He plays the trumpet, root toot toot. But his long suit is blowing the flute. He's the queen of Fire Island. He likes to dress in women's clothes, fancy silken panties and nylon hose. He paints his fingers and paints his toes. He's the queen of Fire Island. He made a speech at their last drag. He said, you know that I don't like to brag, but I really had one that nearly made me gag. He's the queen of Fire Island. He's got dreamy eyes, curly hair. He just dyed it yellow. Doesn't smoke and doesn't swear. He's just a very nice fellow. He never pets, he never necks. He has no use for the opposite sex. But he's going steady with a guy named Tex. He's the queen of Fire Island. I took my girl for a ride last night all around Central Park. In an old-fashioned carriage with only two wheels, inside it was comfy and dark. They call it a hansom, it's drawn by a horse, the driver he sits high above. A wonderful ride with a girl by your side, a wonderful place to make love. Oh, the horse with the hansom behind. The horse with a hansom behind. He just jogs along with a clippity-clop. And though his driver is dozing on top, he knows when to go and he knows when to stop. This horse with a hansom behind. Oh, the horse with a hansom behind. The horse with a hansom behind. He suddenly stopped and he shook quite a bit. He lifted his tail and we said, this is it. We sat there and watched him while he took a fit. This horse with a hansom behind. Oh, the horse with a hansom behind. He knew what I had on my mind. He waited a while till he knew I was hot. Then all of a sudden, he started to trot. The jouncing and bouncing, it helped us a lot. This horse with the hansom behind. Oh, the horse with the hansom behind. He also had love on his mind. A female horse passed us and he turned around. He drew up beside her with one leap and bound. His whatchamacallit, it hung to the ground. This horse with the hansom behind.
Done here. Turn down the headphones. Hi, everyone. It's me, Bad Sister Heidi. Rockin', rollin', strutting and strolling here on Psychoacoustics. You heard a couple of tracks by Salty Peter, The Horse with the Handsome Behind, and He's the Queen of Fire Island off of classic disc Naughty Songs for Nice People. We also heard several tracks from Beatrice Kay and her classic album Having a Party, as well as Miss D. She kissed him in the hallway and he shot across the street. So a lot of comedy and that sort of thing from the 1900s here on Psycho Acoustic. Easy for me to say, Psycho Acoustics. Stay tuned. The Reverend, or not the Reverend, he's not a Reverend. He's just Jefferson. He's just a vinyl Richie. And he's here and getting ready to go. So let's play a couple songs of music to give him a good place to enter the record, radio realm. Yes, a nice entrance for the vinyl Richie into the radio realm at 11 p.m. And it's up to him to give the entrance to Cardinal Din, who will be feeding you weird things starting at 2 a.m. But you know what? If those times are inconvenient, you can listen at any time to our archives at WORTFM.org or on our app. All right, let's hear some more music. We'll be right back.
I'm Mark Thomas, a retired union activist. Tune into the Access Hour Monday at 7 p.m. when I'll interview Mary Englem and Annie Habel about their experience as politically active working class women. Workers' history by people who lived it on the Access Hour Monday at 7 p.m. on WRT Madison.
When we stand hand in hand, that's the power, that's the power that must rule in every land. One industrial union.